morning, everybody. It is Wednesday. It is the 16th of July, already halfway through July. And winter is still very much upon us, and there's nothing we can do about that. But I have noticed that certain things are starting to happen. I saw some observation by somebody in the dark halls of social media yesterday. We're now closer to the year 2050, as of yesterday, I think, than we are to the year 2000.
Yeah, correct.
Jesus. Hey, Ben.
Even with your mass.
Wow, surprise. Ben's here.
Even with your mass, Ben. You can get that one right. I heard birds chirping this morning.
Yeah, that's a nice, that's a good sign, right?
Yeah, the worst is behind us.
I think so. So you just had a little trip to Spain.
Yeah, which was bloody incredible. Wow.
Where in Spain were you guys?
We flew to Malaga, so in the deep south.
Okay. That's lovely.
And we stayed 16 Ks from the Rock of Gibraltar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, oh, what a beautiful thing that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to Live Golf, and that was in Valderrama.
I can see on that. On the
Valderrama.
Very good.
Yeah.
Valderrama.
Gareth, that was one of the coolest trips on so many levels.
Tell me why.
Well, firstly, I've always wanted to go to Valderrama since watching the Ryder Cup on TV there in the 90s.
Right.
It's beautiful. It's just absolutely beautiful. Very difficult to golf there because it's just trees everywhere. But it's stunning. And like that whole dry Mediterranean heat, and you're on the Mediterranean, go for a swim at the beach. It's just so beautiful there.
That's,
and so relaxed. And it's just like, it's golf country.
That's the greater, what they call it, the Costa del Sol or something.
Yeah, in that greater region, there's 70 golf courses or something. People go there to play golf. It's a golfing mecca.
Can you see Africa from there?
Yes. If you look towards Gibraltar and left a bit, you'll see the lights.
Okay. All right. So you're right at the end of the Mediterranean there.
Yeah. And I went with the Tour of Es crew. So we did it, obviously, as good as you could possibly get it. We were the first people to stay in this hotel.
All right.
It literally just opened for us.
Huh.
And I think
that was the first hotel you ever really could say, I know no one has shat this bathroom.
I made the first poo in my room, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Made disgusting things happen in the bed. You knew it.
Didn't
was totally
that.
New.
Didn't do that.
No. But I mean, you. I often think about that when I go to hotels.
Well, yeah, of course, because every guy thinks about stuff like
that. No, I genuinely find other people horrifying and revolting, and it's getting worse as I'm getting older.
Oh, the room was, this hotel was incredible, massive pool, most incredible food. I can now understand why people get fat. My ankles are still fat. And I know that's got to do with plane travel and stuff, but I have fat ankles and my feet are swollen. I feel fat, but so happy and good. And we just ate and drank, and it was phenomenal. It was like early 30s. The one day it was so fucking windy. It was so windy that it stopped the golf.
Really?
And after that, it was cool. It's chilled.
Shit. Okay. Well, we have a lot to get to this morning. The reason Ben's here is because we're just acclimatizing you slowly to the fact that this show is going to go to one show a week soon. Just get ready for it. And I don't want to hear any complaints in the comments section. One live show a week. Well, I mean, because if they woke up this morning and do not adjust your internet, it's not Friday.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
They would think it's Friday, and they'd think, oh, well, okay, Ben's here on a Friday.
Sorry, I thought you'd make it sound like I'm just trying to, cut back the show.
No, not at all. It's more a question of James was still scrambling to kind of put things together last night, and I sent him a message, rude message, saying, who's on? He's like, I'll get back to you. You could see the steam coming out of his
ears. Was I not first choice, James?
Yeah, this is what he's trying to tell you, Ben.
It's not very nice.
No. I'm delighted, though, because we've actually got a shit ton of things to get to this morning.
Okay.
So, yeah, I want to talk about, there's so much in the news that's worth reflecting on. So, apparently, it's being contested by both sides, but apparently Kabisi Jonas, who was Cyril's supposed appointee to as ambassador for South Africa to America, right?
Yep.
He was going to take over from the now disgraced Ibrahim Rasool. Mm-hmm. And Jonas was a choice that Cyril thought was safe because he has been in business, In the ANC, being in business means that you've normally stolen something. But in Jonas's case, he's got a pretty good record. But like everyone else who's been in the ANC, he's a commie.
Yeah.
And Americans hate commies, especially this Trump administration. They really hate a commie. So if you send Comrade X or Comrade Y, they're just going to say, no, thank you. We don't want to deal with those commies. Because commies, it's the same reason I don't allow them in my house, is because commies steal things.
They're terrible.
You can't trust them around anything that isn't bolted down.
And they kill the vibe so much.
Oh, so much. And they're always trying to find a way to get into other people's money. It's just appalling. So, and again, I'm going to warn you, if you know any communists, you need to offload them right out of your friend group right now. A friend of mine jokingly said the other day, oh, you must meet this friend of mine. He's a communist. And I said, no, it's fine. I think it is entirely acceptable.
That guy needs better jokes.
Well,
he
was trying to be funny, but I think he's serious. I think he does know a commie. Anyway, you've got to stay away from these people. So Jonas has not had a visa issued. The U.S. refused to give him a visa. And this is according to the DA. The ANC saying, nonsense, he'd never needed a visa anyway, which you'll notice if you're paying attention, doesn't mean he was denied his visa. It just means the ANC reckons he didn't need one anyway because he's a diplomatic appointment. So read that any way you like. I don't trust any politicians, but in this case, if it's true that Mgcebisi Jonas was not given a visa, again, it's just another situation that we have on the books now of the ANC and its people being held accountable in a way that they've never been held accountable here. The people of this country, the laws, the courts, the criminal justice system in this country, all these commissions of inquiry, of which our president launched another one over the weekend, never hold anyone accountable. You just don't see them in prison. You don't see them chopping open rocks to make gravel to fill potholes, which is what these politicians who are caught with their hands in the till ought to be doing. You know, I was complaining with James and Flex the other day on the balcony because we were saying, it's amazing how this is a country where if you're a small-time drug dealer, like you're selling fucking weed in a matchbox at the robot, you get arrested, right? Yep. The cops will. Or if you're a street vendor and you've got like a stall where you're selling mohodu or something, but you haven't got the right papers, the police will find you and they'll take half your stuff and put you in the back of the van and take you to the police station. Like they're really quick to arrest those people. If you're a licensed driver who owns your car and the car is insured and you drive 20 kilometers over the speed limit, they will arrest you and they will take you to the police station and try to extract money from you. But if you steal billions of rands from the National Treasury, if you're in cahoots with the Guptas and the Zumas and name all the other crime families you'd like to, it doesn't seem anything happens to you. So people are just pissed off because there's never any accountability.
Zero.
And now, for the first time, like daddy is treating the kids like they should have been treated from the beginning. And by daddy, I mean the United States because it is the world's policeman. And thank God for it. Otherwise, everyone would be behaving like Somalia. Okay, and this country's politicians have never had their feet held to the fire by anyone. Because if the ANC hears the DA say something, like, oh, it's those fucking DA guys. And let's admit, they are a pain in the ass, right?
Mostly, they are. Yeah.
So are all the other smaller parties. I saw Gayton McKenzie. Okay, now I've been a big Gayton McKenzie fan. I think he's doing a lot. As Minister of Sport, he certainly likes going to the matches, makes himself very seen and heard. He's promised lots of things. I don't know how many of those he's delivered, but I heard him say something that has irritated me like you can't believe. He was complaining about how, as a minister, he and his delegation, I think, not just he, need to fly business class. Sorry, now I'm sneezing.
Sorry.
You might have noticed it's all the brown that Ben and I are wearing.
Yeah, right? Wish it was autumn day.
So anyway, he says they have to fly business class. And this is apparently something that his supporters think is fine. You know, it's amazing how many people in this country, in South Africa, are willing to be servile if they think that the politician they're being servile toward is just going to throw them a bone.
Well, you see similar in like religious communities. As long as the priest has a nice car, the rest of them...
It's absolute credulity and stupidity.
Yeah.
But if Gayton McKenzie considers himself deserving of business class tickets, I believe he's made some money in business. He's done some, you know, mining and a bunch of other things, which I'm sure he's done legitimately. Who knows? But if he has and he's got some money of his own, sir, you are welcome to spend as much of your own money as you like, but not taxpayer money. I think that party has finished. We are up to here. I saw on X yesterday a number of people complaining about the red tape that you have to go through to start a business, how you have to register with this and register with that, and the Department of Labor has this to do with you, and then there's SARS and all of that shit. And it is extremely hard for people in this country to run a business. Now, with these tariffs, these U.S. tariffs coming in August, apparently industries like iron and steel, which bring some 500 billion rand into the country when we're selling to America, that's in jeopardy. Cars, to the tune of, I think, 70-odd billion rand, in jeopardy. What was the other thing? Nuts and fruits.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? But fruit and nuts, again, a couple of hundred billion rand in exports that are now under threat because those exports ordinarily would go to the United States and sell like hotcakes because it's cheap to buy them from us and take them to the US. Now with Trump's tariffs at 30%, for us to sell those things in America is going to be a lot more difficult. So they're going to be businesses that lay people off. I saw some really ridiculous news analyst yesterday saying, well, you know, we could always try other markets, but there is no market like the United States if you're trying to sell stuff.
Well, isn't it? Yeah, then if we try the markets, do we get tariffed more?
Yeah, correct.
I haven't really been paying attention to that because my life's been fun the last 2 weeks. But
no, I know. I'm sorry about this.
How do you?
I'm sorry about this. This is people's reality.
Is there an out clause on that? Like, does Cyril have
there were a number of things that our government had to do, just like, four things.
Don't be commies.
Yeah, correct. Basically, don't be commies. Stop saying that it's okay to kill certain population groups. Scrap this BEE bullshit because it's basically racism. And that's what
it's just there's only benefit to so few people, it's not broad.
Absolutely, but you're also you're messing with merit. Yes. And this is why we've got cuck people all over. We've now got a new acting police minister, a guy called Feroz Khachalia. Again, I'm willing to give the guy a chance, but you know, the track record, if you're a pattern-seeking mammal, which is what intelligent humans are, dumb humans can't even see patterns, but if you're a pattern-seeking mammal, then you will notice that every appointment Cyril's made is someone cuck. Like, he doesn't know what merit is.
Well, it's because he's cuck.
He's never seemingly appointed anyone who can do something properly. So I have to ask, with tears in my eyes, what chance does this poor Feroz Khachalia have? He was MEC for police in Gauteng for a while. Gauteng, to my mind, never had a terrific couple of weeks. You know, we never had a few months or weeks where the crime was just totally under control. So I don't know how great Feroz Khachalia is at anything. Let's give him a go. But again, no merit. That's another thing that's a problem with BEE. And then the fourth thing, which I always tend to forget, has something to do with
don't be friendly
expropriation without compensation.
Oh, right,
that's what it was. So you can't take people, again, commie stuff, right? So don't take people's stuff. If this mug is mine and you try to take it, I will shoot you. That's a natural law as old as humans. If you want my stuff, you must either prove that you have a legal right to it, or you must take it by force. And then I have the right to fight back and defend my right to that property by force. So these are basic things that, like, the ANC really believes in, I don't know, maybe they all went to Disney instead of the Soviet Union to get their training under MK, but it's not magic. You can't magically reinvent things like rule of law, things like free markets, things like the way money flows. You can't just, we'll make a law and everyone will follow it. That's not how it works. So I'm annoyed about this. Apparently Durban is uniting. Here's something that's less annoying. In their support for Commissioner Mkwanazi, this is the brave police commissioner in KZN, and Nhlanhla Mkwanazi, who is drawing, it seems, huge amounts of support from people all over KZN. They've also had it up to here.
But they also just don't like Cyril. Traditionally, he's not been popular.
Well, that's part of it, too. You're right. Helps. You're right to point that out, actually. Oh, good point. Well put. So that's going on. Apparently,
but, okay, wait, hang on a second. So again, I'm catching this in the back foot here. But then there's talk of this whole national shutdown thing. Now,
oh, is that a thing? I didn't know about that.
So in KZN already, as of yesterday, they're already galvanizing together and they want to do stuff. But can I point out that national shutdown doesn't mean complete and utter fucking anarchy where shit must get broken? Like, there's got to be a fine line between the two, right? People are upset and we all want Cyril out, all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't mean that shops must get looted or stuff must get broken. There has to be a differentiation.
Ben, you're asking quite a lot here.
I know I'm asking people, quite a lot here,
you're asking people to, you're asking people to apply sensibility and rational, objective, again, intelligence to a situation that they just can't. They don't know how. They see an opportunity to riot or to steal something, and that becomes like a magnet. They can't help. It's like a dog when you're shining a light at the floor and it'll chase that until it runs out of breath and has a heart attack. It's like some people are as dumb as that. They see an opportunity to behave badly and they can't help themselves.
Yeah. So I think the
why they can't have nice things.
Exactly. But we should have nice things because there are actually lots of nice people out there. But like 2 or 3 years ago on the show, I said that we'll never get rid of politicians because no one's really prepared to actually have a proper coup. And you're like, you're actually inciting violence. This is kind of illegal. But it's true. People are so casual, comfy in their lives. Cyril's shit. But our lives are also like kind of comfy. So who's going to stand outside the union buildings for 4 days and throw feces at the windows? Like, I haven't got time for that.
No, and also I don't want to behave like that. I've never
still want to behave like it.
I don't know about you. I've never taken part in a riot or in a protest in my life. Gareth, I'm never going to.
I know. But, you know, in order to get extraordinary outcomes, you must do extraordinary things. So people are saying Cyril must go. He ain't going fucking nowhere. If we sit here on like X, tap, 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 tap.
That's true.
We need to go and throw excrement at windows and
excrement.
Look, top of my head, okay? I'll refine the idea by Friday.
Ben got that idea from his friends, the chimpanzees at the zoo.
Yes. But like, otherwise, it's just he doesn't care. But if you really actually look like you're going to take him out.
On this note, you say that people are, you know, we just haven't done enough. And maybe you're right. And I don't know that people are comfortable. You know what the minimum wage, I mean, what the average wage in South Africa is, right? It's a handful of thousand rand a month. And let's say it's 9 at the far end, and at the much less generous end, it's 4,000 rand a month. Okay, so that's a fair window. That is not a lot of money for people to live on for a month. So I don't think that anyone who's on the average wage, remember that also means that there are lots of people who are far lower than that and lots of people who are higher. But how much do you think, and this is a statistic I found out yesterday, how much do you think it would take for you to be richer than 50% of the people in the world? And I'm not talking about your salary. What I'm talking about here is your total net asset value. If you sold your car, all the expensive things that you own, if you had to liquidate all of your assets and you had to work out roughly, thumb suck, what you think you're worth, what do you think you'd have to be worth to be richer than half of the people on earth?
Do you want dollars or rands?
Rands. I've got it in rands. Or you can say it in dollars if you like.
Gareth, I sadly believe if you've got over 100,000 rand, you're probably richer than half the people on this earth.
It's a very good guess. At 76,662 rand, you are richer than 50% of the people on earth.
Wow.
So in other words, if you own a car and you've paid it off, even if it's a piece of shit and it's worth less than 100,000 rand, you probably have more than 50% of the people on earth. So a thing with Jimmy Carr yesterday too. And I like him, he's funny, but he said something in a serious tone of voice, which I took particular notice of, maybe because I'm so unused to him being serious. But he said, you know, you wake up in the morning and you hop in the shower and you have a hot shower. And that is something that 50, 60 years ago, nobody on earth had. 100 years ago, certainly no one had it. So even the richest person, Rockefeller and Carnegie and all of those barons of the turn of the century, the Industrial Revolution overlords who built these phenomenal companies and the spine of the railway in America and that kind of thing, those guys didn't know how great it felt to have a hot shower. So Jimmy Carr says every time you get in the shower, you should just go, shit, this is nice. And he's right.
I still believe that long-distance air travel is ridiculously special.
Mm.
I know you go in a place where people are farting in a small chamber.
Yeah, that's quite revolting, actually.
It is, but in a short space of time, you can go to another world, basically. You can go to different countries. You can see so much.
Yeah, again, before.
Your life changes completely for a week.
What would you have had to have done? You would have had to get on a ship and take like 3 months, right?
So much time.
And by the way, this is in living memory, hey? Yeah. There are people alive today who were alive before flight. It's before the Wright brothers. Okay, they're in their hundreds by now, and there are a few of those. By the way, they also said the other day, I'm full of information today, Ben. I hope you don't mind. You're not exhausted.
Carry on.
They worked out that the most they can push humans to at the moment in terms of longevity, 115 for women, 114 for men. And they reckon that's the outside edge of longevity as it stands.
See, that makes sense to me. You get these dipshits who go, and they'll live to a 200. No, I don't see it.
You know what you're going to look like and smell like at 200.
But even then, it's increments, right? Mm. To go from 100 to 105 is huge. To go to 110 is gigantic. You don't suddenly leap to 200. That's like having a car that taps out at 140. Go, no, we get it to 170. No, 142 would be fucking incredible after that.
That's a very good point. I've got a couple of things to show you, some clips
I want to
and
be
so
like
on.
I want to be a good 100. I want to raise my bat. But then again, you know, it's like, what are the years 80 to 100 going to be like? Are you just treading water? Are you just holding on?
Yeah, I mean, you have, I've often said this on the show, you get a good 80 and you get a terrible 80. And you get a good 60, you get a terrible 60. You get a good 30 and you get a terrible 30. I honestly can tell you of actual people I've seen who are in their 20s who are unhealthy, they are obese, they are lazy, they have nothing going on between their ears, and they're wasting youth. And then I see someone who's in their 80s or 90s, and they absolutely love living, and they are vital, and they put in the effort, and they pay attention, and they live in the moment, and all of the things that I admire.
So what would you define a good, like, in my mind, you have
to... If you get to 100, not falling apart would be a good...
So you have to be able to go to the toilet by yourself.
Yes.
As in, we're not talking nappies here. We're not talking boo-boos. You got to go by yourself, right?
No,
exactly. It's just, you got to be able to initiate humorous conversation.
Right.
And I think you got to be able to transport yourself, as in still be able to drive.
Yes.
Still probably. Have the agency to kind of...
Although I'm nervous about anyone over the age of 95 driving.
Then they must not... They must... Done. No. So when you say, like, I want to be a good 80... All of those things. If you want to be a good 90, that's what it is.
You must be able to look after yourself and not fall everywhere and not need a nursemaid to wipe your bum, that kind of thing. Speaking of which, there's this great joke that Walter Matthau told on the Tonight Show years ago with Johnny Carson. He says, I was going to try not to tell a toilet joke, but I can't help myself. He says, there's three guys and they're sitting at a bar and they're complaining. All old. First guy goes, I would give anything to just be able to piss properly. It's like it's dribble, it's dribs and drabs, it's annoying, and I could, the flow is very poor, it's very weak. I'm very unhappy about this. The guy next to him goes, what I wouldn't give to just have a solid shit. Just, you know, that great feeling after you've woken up and you... Third guy looks at them and goes, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, I piss like the Amazon River. It's phenomenal. My flow is great. It's like a scene from a special effects in a movie of one of those geezers in Yellowstone Park just erupting. And he says, I can shit. I've got the perfect consistency. It's solid. I'm very proud of my shits. And every morning at 7:35, I take a piss, and every morning at 7:40, I take a shit. So the other two guys go, so what are you complaining about? He goes, well, I only get out of bed at 7:50. All right. So, we have to play this for you. I saw, you know, Al Bundy, right?
Yes.
Speaking of old, grumpy old men. So here's Al Bundy. I don't know when this came out. He was interviewed about Married with Children. Of course, he's been in Modern Family since then.
His real name's Ed somebody.
Yeah, Ed something or another. I just know him as,
yeah,
you know.
Everyone does.
Al Bundy. So anyway, he was great on that show when I was a kid, and he was talking about it and being a bit nostalgic. And he said there was one person in the cast he just really didn't get along with. It wasn't Christina Applegate, his daughter. It wasn't David Faustino, the son. It wasn't Peg Bundy, who everybody loved. He got on well with all of them. Look and see if you can identify, if you can remember who this person is. And then he'll tell you why they never got along. Have you got that clip? Go for it.
Along great. The only one I don't get along with, and I don't think I'm the only one, is Amanda.
Really? How come?
I'm not sure what happened there. I mean, because it was wonderful for 3 years. She was great. I don't know whose fault it was. We just sort of grew a bit apart. We argued about certain things, and I don't know what it was. And she changed a bit. I mean, I have to say that when she started out, she was gay, because she was gay a long time. She was more or less the female in the couple. The show, you know, 11 years, it went. As it progressed, the change took place where she then was the more masculine. And that became kind of interesting, because then as she became more masculine, she became a little more snarky, you know. She could grow a tooth, as we used to say. I remember one instance where she was getting married. The invitations went out, and I didn't get one, and neither did David Faustino. And now, we weren't arguing. Well, I said to David, well, everyone got one but you and I. And I think Ron Levitt didn't get one. Everyone else did. And I thought, you know, and I thought it was funny. But at the same time, I thought, this is stupid on her part. You know, why would she do this? So I went to her. And why? And she said, this was a very tough call. But I just feel that you would find it amusing that me and Becky would come in tuxedos in a church and walk down the aisle, and you and David would be snickering and finding it funny. I said, Amanda, what is funny about two women in tuxedos walking down the church aisle? I started laughing. And she said, see? I said, well, you know why? Because it is fucking funny. And I'm not going to be the only one that doesn't think so. Well, that was it, you know. But it was funny. She had a little white tux, and, you know, it was just, to me, it was funny. But so, in other words, she may not have been wrong in excluding me, but
I think that's so great.
That's so cool.
And it's got to be analyzed on a number of levels, right? So, I mean, first of all, and JP says, I think we all hated her on the show anyway, method acting. Yeah, she was a miserable bitch. She was the next door neighbor and, yeah, horrible person.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, it's not too difficult to see the leap from, you know, kind of angry lesbian in real life into angry lesbian on the show. And I mean, there is something comical about like two women in tuxes walking down the aisle together.
Of course it is.
And everyone knows it, as Al Bundy says there. And I just don't know why we've been putting up with this bullshit charade for the longest time to pretend we care about other people's feelings, which we probably aren't capable of.
Very well put. We're not capable of it. So when we try, it comes across as even more stupid.
Yeah, and it's insincere.
Yeah.
Like, no one's actually standing at home practicing.
Of course not. And then people will listen to this and go, oh, look at these guys. They're so insensitive. But it's not. People have got to be more honest about this shit, just like him.
They just put up that quote again. That's hilarious. That's from Al Bundy. From Danny here in the comment section. Don't try to understand women. Women understand women, and they hate each other. Bundy. In fact, if you watch clips from Married with Children, it seems to me that it's more relevant than ever before.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on there.
But that dude's life, I forget his last name, right? Ed something.
I'll look him up for you. Carry on.
if you look at his acting career, again, it depends how old you are, who he is. He's either L or he's J from Modern Family. Ed O'Neill. Okay, so most people only know him as J from Modern Family.
Right.
And then most people kind of know he's Al Bundy from Married with Children.
Oh.
That guy's acting career was actually really funny because he grew up as a 90s kind of dad, and then it was like the new age kind of dad, where you will have a gay person in your family, mixed race, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He's gone both ways, but he was great in both times, I think.
And he's just a really good actor. And clearly doesn't take himself too seriously. He's telling stories like this.
He must have enjoyed so much because he's made massive money out of those two shows too. And he probably just plays golf with his mates and makes offside jokes.
I just thought of something else that made that Married with Children show so funny. Do you know what Peg Bundy's name was before she married him?
No.
Peggy Wanker.
Really?
She was Peggy Wanker in the show.
See, in the 90s you could do that.
And the child was Bud.
Yeah.
And one other child? Kelly. That's right. Bud and Kelly. Peggy Wanker. That was her name.
And he sold shoes all day.
Oh, well. She just complained. She had the big hair and the tits out the whole time. It was really the American dream. You know? He was a shoe salesman. He just insulted everybody about their feet.
Yeah.
He was great. What a terrific human being. I think L. Bundy, and the neighbor's name was Marcy. Marcy Darcy.
Yes, and then had that sort of like orange husband as well, who was like the Ken doll.
That's right.
Yeah.
What a great show. All right, so I've got L. Bundy for you. The other thing I wanted to show you this morning, because we kind of hinted at this just a moment ago, but this is the guy, I think he's the chairman of Goldman Sachs. Is that right? J.P. Morgan. Sorry, J.P. Morgan. Also talking about Gen Z. And, you know, we often will attack and revile all generations except mine and Ben's. I think we're in the same one, Gen X, some way, shape, or form. Who knows? But here's another reason to really loathe and despise Gen Z. All right, give it a go. Here's the guy who runs J.P. Morgan.
These kids, anyone who's depressed, as long as we don't have, like, nuclear war, they're going to have an unbelievable life. They're going to inherit, like people say, the next generation's in bad shape. Really? They're going to inherit a country that's worth $200-300 trillion. They're probably going to live to 120. AI is going to cure some cancers.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be bemoaning their situation. They should be looking at this world and saying, what can I make of it? You know, what can I do better than the folks before me?
Right. So we have to keep reminding people, and I sometimes feel like it's a broken record thing on this show, because I try to remind people of how amazing it is to be alive right now. Because, you know, if people don't hear this over and over again, they get consumed by the news. The news makes them depressed. They look at the value of the money they get to take home, and they think it's less and less. But you are still living in the best possible time. You can go to a shop.
So much opportunity.
You know, you go to a shop, and even if you have zero money, it is amazing to watch the process by which shop shelves are always stocked. And you don't have to go far to see how it doesn't work. You know, Zimbabwe is a laughing stock of the world and a ridiculous, stupid country. And we're subsidizing them by having a whole bunch of Zimbabweans living here in our country. But it didn't take long for them to go from being a civilized place to being an anarchy. And where nothing was available on the shelves anymore, and nothing worked, and there was no electricity, and the roads turned into more pothole than road. So you don't have to look far to see an example of how badly it can go. But even in the worst possible case like Zimbabwe, it doesn't feel like 200 years ago, you know? Mm. And even further back, where you actually had to like put on some animal skins and go out into the forest or tundra to go and hunt for something with a sharpened stick. It's not, humans have only been around from like a minute to midnight on the clock of the Earth's life. So just be grateful. And the fact that you can actually listen to and watch us this morning and have a meaningful argument and or agreement with us is phenomenal.
But also just getting offline a lot of the time. You know, people get depressed because they're constantly comparing.
Good point.
But there's so many things you can do. Like, we went to this Irish pub to go watch the rugby on Saturday.
Yeah.
Wherever you are in the world, you want to watch the Springboks? Find an Irish pub.
Sure.
They'll sort you out. And the guy behind the bar there, it's his place. And I said, and he was Irish. So I said jokingly to him, it's like, oh, you don't sound like you're from Spain. And he's like, no, I came here when I was younger. And within within half an hour, I realized like I actually quite like it here.
And he moved there.
And he went from a place where the weather's shit and he could have just become fat and drunk. And now he lives in the south of Spain. And then he's got another place in Andorra for ski season.
Wow.
But he got up, he went to a place and he made it happen for himself.
Well, here's an example. Have you got the picture of that guy in the prison uniform? Do you know who this guy is? All right, let me explain. Here's an example of someone who got up and went to a place and made the move that he wanted to move, the thing he wanted to do. Look at that guy.
Oh, wow.
All right, how's that? So he is not a cast member of The Walking Dead season 410.
Not yet.
He should be. I mean, that person, if it is a person, he's a convicted child kidnapper. Okay, so even if he didn't look like that, he's already a terrible person.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's a child kidnapper and looks like that, I don't know how you get to look like that. I don't know what he's done to his skin. It's sort of a grayish color, like it's sloughing off of his face. His teeth would give you an indication that he's probably a meth addict of some kind. The eyes are red and yellow as opposed to how they should look. And always, I just want to warn you that if you meet people and instead of the whites of their eyes being white, they're yellow, you're probably dealing with someone who's got very, very bad body chemistry going on. It's usually the first indicator is that the whites of the eyes are not white anymore.
Right.
Very unhealthy to have that going on. Anyway, that creature that I just showed you is now, and it is a creature. I don't know, am I wrong? No. If that came, listen, Flex, James, and everybody in the comment section, if that thing came walking towards you, would you take your chances that he was going to ask you if he could borrow a light for his cigarette? No. Fuck that, says James. Flex, if that guy walked up to you at the gate of your complex and said, please let me in, I'm very hungry, what would you do? Yeah, you'd punch him in the face, says Flex. What would you do, Ben?
I'd probably have to resort to violence because he seems quite determined.
All right, now listen. This guy was hanging around a playground attempting to abduct children. When they came to get him, he ran away and they caught him and they put him in jail. They're now trying him, but his lawyer and the district attorney for Colorado, who's the person who will prosecute him, hopefully, it's a woman who is not great looking herself, but she doesn't look like that. She says, no, we can't put this guy in jail on grounds that he is insane. And I don't know that that's an excuse. If you are the kind of person who wants to abduct children, aren't you insane anyway? And shouldn't you still go to jail?
But isn't the reason that you get arrested because you're a threat to society?
Right.
There's no asterisk on what kind of threat you are. A threat is a threat.
So he may be a beautiful mind. He may be
He may be good at maths.
He may be all kinds of things.
It's not going to be any less daunting to children,
though.
He
could be mildly autistic and great at chess. Yeah. But I don't think anyone on planet Earth wants him near their children.
No.
Okay, and if he's lurking around a children's playground, that is the kind of final straw. That's not the thing he did wrong. He looks like that. He should already be suspicious to everyone on planet Earth. And I don't know what it takes with some people that they cannot see. His face helped with my constipation, says I cannot see why it takes some people such a long time to realize they've got a threat in the world. Like there are bad people who want to hurt children, for example. That guy, I don't know why the district attorney, this guy is why I put my bed on bricks, says Slippery Pickle. I don't know why some people can't see that that person is a bad idea to have around in free society. How he should be allowed to just wander about molesting and kidnapping children.
I know this sounds strange because I've never had paternalness in me, nor have I ever intended to have children to this point. But why can't we care more about kids?
Well, it seems.
Because
I mean,
if the guy's walking like that around those places, yeah. the children are a threat. Do kids not mean more? Like, who's this sack of shit defending this guy?
She won't even prosecute him because he hasn't got defense attorneys yet. But the DA for Colorado is saying she might not prosecute him because, oh, shame, he's got mental health issues.
Yes, but if a kid gets molested, kid gets abducted or injured or anything like that, that kid's fucked for life. Okay?
I'm going to find you a picture of the DA.
We've got to be stronger in like how we protect children.
I want to find you a
picture. Actually, we need to be more ruthless in how to protect children.
I agree with you. And by the way, this is something I want to talk to you about because I know you've been very vocal about the Jeffrey Epstein thing.
No, well, you have.
I mean, you don't like, which is not an unusual
thing. I fucking hate pedos.
Yeah, you hate pedos like I do. You find them,
I just don't think it's a fair fight. You right. know? Like, again, criminals can be criminals because the human mind is fucked and us as humans, we're savages.
Yes.
But don't go after the kids. It's not a fair fight.
Okay, so this brings me to my question. What do you think of the fact that the Trump administration has so clearly fucked up the narrative around this Epstein thing? Pam Bondi, the United States district attorney for the whole country, she's a big deal, said she had the Epstein client list on her desk in February of this year. She said it was on her desk. She's going to go and look at it, and she's going to hand it over. And then she did this ridiculous piece of theater where she called a whole bunch of right-wing influencers to the White House, and they gave them a folder with the Epstein files, part one, written on it. There was nothing new in there at all. There was no information that anybody found even remotely interesting. They revealed nothing. Then, a couple of months later, now they're clearly ashamed and embarrassed because either they don't have anything or they're covering it up. Those are the only two possibilities. They've either managed this so badly that the expectation's been set here and it's a red herring. There's just nothing in it. Or there's tons of info and they just don't want to hand it over because it's compromising to too many powerful people. So what is it? Which is it?
Look, I think this. When Trump came to office, there was a lot of people who were happy for a lot of reasons. And I think one of them was come back to the fact is no more bullshit, transparency, people who've done shit are going to be found out. And I think that was a big thing that people took out. If you've got no interest in US politics, you have no interest in the right or the left, that was the one thing that people actually really like held on to. So if that doesn't happen, then it makes Trump look really bad. Second thing, if there is no list, why is Ghislaine Maxwell in prison then?
Ghislaine Maxwell.
If there's no list.
Yeah, well.
What's she in there for?
Yeah, correct. And they said, this is another thing they said. They said there are hundreds of children who are victims. They were protecting these victims. They can't release some of the footage and some of the pictures because it compromises these children who are now adults, but who were children at the time that they were taken on the Lolita Express or to Epstein Island or whatever. So we have victims. So if you have victims, you must have perpetrators. And if you have perpetrators, why aren't you telling us who they are?
But then it's that whole like Justin Bieber story, right? Do you protect the victim by not revealing the...
Well, you don't have to tell us who the victims were. You don't have to give their names or share their pictures. The only reason we even know this exists is a story by Victoria Jufre or whatever her name is, who subsequently killed herself. Funny that. She and Epstein. But if there are victims, there must be perpetrators. And if those perpetrators are adult human beings, they should be held accountable for what they've done. And even Kevin Costner yesterday, not Kevin Costner, who's the guy? Who's the actor who was always a bit handsy? Well, there's a lot of those, right?
The guy Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey, thank you. That's the guy. I can't remember him, and then I think handsy, and then it eventually comes to me.
Did you ever listen to the podcast he did with that guy, Lex Friedman?
No.
It's very interesting. I mean, he still comes across as a creep. And
yes.
He likes young boys. Okay, some people, that's the way.
Sure.
Okay, that's how they ball. But he came across so interesting. Like, he admitted the fact that he was a bit handsy. He sounded like he was quite remorseful. It was a really touching episode. It was like 3 hours long. At the end, I just thought to myself, yeah, but he's an actor.
Yeah, so you can pull it off. Anyway, he tweeted out yesterday on this Epstein thing. He's like, just for God's sake, just give us the Epstein files. Just tell us whatever you got. And honestly, I don't see any other way out now for the Trump administration. And for,
they have to. He has to go in there and be true to his
Cash Patel
word.
And Dan Bongino and Pam Bondi, they're just going to put it all out there and let the public have a go. And if it means that there are embarrassing consequences, too bad. If you went to pedophile Epstein Island, you should be embarrassed.
Yeah, but money's powerful there, Gareth. Fuck, it's so powerful. It does such amazing things.
So you think they're still hiding things?
Well, of course. And they have the ability to. And as much as you want to be the big white knight and say these kind of things, in life you actually can't, unfortunately. Things are so... I mean, just look at like the political elite in this country. It is so rotten and protected.
Yeah,
no one person can go in there and go, right, guys, we're going to clean the house. Or as Donald Trump said, we're going to drain the swamp.
Right.
That swamp is built. It's structured. It's vast. You don't just go in there and like, woo, done.
By the way, this the zombie that I showed you just now, his name is Solomon Galligan. And she first, the woman who eventually had it, we're going to show this picture a lot this morning, right? By the way, are we doing the window seat? Okay. That's more important than this zombie, but we'll get back to the zombie. I got a lot to tell you about the zombie because there's a whole backstory to him. And I mean, it's The Walking Dead.
Protect the kids.
Yeah, I just think that's a very reasonable thing.
That's how you get fucked up adults, right? You let them go get molested and whatever, and then suddenly
they're kidnapped by a guy like that.
It's like the zombie thing. Once you bite them, they become zombies.
Right.
It's the same thing that happens when you
agreed.
Let them get interfered with.
Don't let them interfere with the children. But even the people who've been, who we think are on the list, like Kevin Spacey, they're all saying, just release the goddamn thing. Let's just see who else is there.
Well, another thing is that a lot of these people are being, like, everyone thinks they're on the list.
Yeah.
So they're being treated like they're on the list anyway.
Right.
Might as well be out in the open.
And what if they reveal on the list that those people are not? Then that's a kind of unfair thing that they've been subjected to.
Everyone will get on fighting here. And more people will die, so kill themselves.
We have to publish it.
Have to.
Let it all out. Release the... Just release the toxins. It's like lancing a boil.
Rip off the Band-Aid.
To release it, yeah.
But the thing is, what if you went once because you went with a mate who said there's this really cool island? Or what if you went 20 times and you were fucking the kids? Now, you're on the same list. Very different crimes. Very different crimes completely.
Right.
Like, you could be a psychopathic child molester, or you just went because you had a mate who was going on a private jet somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
So, all of these things are nuanced, but hey.
Okay, well, let's turn our attention to something much more pleasant, shall we? It is time for us to do the window seat. This is with travel.co.za, and you can go and check out travel.co.za for all the best possible options for international and local travel. And we've talked so much about fancy destinations and all the rest of it. And this morning we're going to talk about bucket list to life lessons, the journeys that matter most. I mean, I love that as a kind of rubric to get into travel, because that's the reason that so many people do want to travel is they want to have a journey that really matters, something, some kind of life experience they will remember forever. So with over 19 years in luxury hospitality, travel and event management, we're going to speak to Stacey Lee Roberts, who's built a career defined by precision and excellence. She's worked in the iconic Burj Al Arab, which is that amazing hotel in Dubai, and with Michelin star chefs across the Middle East, setting new standards in service. She's a passionate traveler who's explored 36 countries, and she blends global insight with a sharp eye for detail, crafting unforgettable experiences and high-profile events with finesse. Stacey Lee, what an intro. It's nice to have you on. How are you?
Amazing. Thanks for having me on the show, Gareth.
Yeah, it's so nice to speak to you, and it sounds to me like you've had some pretty amazing adventures.
I'd say my job is nothing but boring, eh?
Nothing but? No, you mean anything but boring?
No, there's nothing boring about it.
Right.
Whenever I get on the plane, knowing I'm going to a new destination to experience something completely epic that I happen to get to plan. So it's pretty amazing.
We'll talk a little bit about what exactly you do in a moment, but you know, a lot of people who get to do the thing that they've always dreamed of, they can get jaded after a while. And it doesn't sound to me like you are. I mean, when you're talking about sitting at the window seat and looking out there and seeing the world pass by underneath you and going to amazing places, I don't think you could ever get tired of that.
You don't, to be honest. And even going back to destinations, in 1 year, I went back to Italy 3 times. And even sure. though you can think like, okay, it must get boring. You've eaten enough pasta, enough pizza. There's just so much to uncover and so much to explore that it never gets boring. So it always brings me quite a lot of excitement whenever I know I'm about to dump my passport, go into a new or familiar airport and explore the destination.
All right, so let's talk about travel experiences that really change your life, because that, for many people, is the point of travel, is that you have your perspective changed forevermore. You go to some place, you meet people, you have an experience, you eat certain food, you drink certain things, you kind of have some unforgettable moment that changes the rest of your life. You've obviously had a few of those. Can you give us an idea of what they might have been?
I'd say before I actually started working in travel, when I was traveling in my personal capacity, one of the first few destinations that I visited was Vietnam. And I was so taken aback by the spirit of the Vietnamese people. Obviously, looking at the history of the country and the war that they've been through and so forth, you look at the resilience of the people, how welcoming they are, how hardworking they are. But just the complete spirit of the Vietnamese people, for me, that completely humbled me and changed my perspective on everything, I'd say.
What about the bucket list? Because I introduced this as being from bucket list to life lessons. I mean, what bucket list destinations lived up to your expectations or even exceeded them?
Well, just recently, I've been to the UEFA Champions League final, and that was quite an experience. In the beginning, I was a little bit apprehensive about, you know, spending quite a long time in Germany. Germans obviously have a reputation for being quite cold, and the country itself having been through a lot as well. Quite a hectic history over there. But spending time in Munich completely changed my perception of the German people. They were so warm, so welcoming. And then going to the UEFA Champions League final was next level. We planned an event for a corporate client, and we were very, very fortunate liaising directly with UEFA that we actually had a box which was next to Tom Cruise and David Beckham while they were doing the broadcast.
Holy shit. Really?
Yeah, so it was quite cool.
How many of the girls in the box were busy watching that more than what was going on?
I'm sure. I mean, it was quite funny, you know, just going to the restroom and on your way back, you bump into Tom Cruise. It's
Holy
pretty
shit.
Epic.
Wow. I mean, UEFA Champions League final, Ben, that would be right up your alley. Too.
Every single year is something special. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty amazing.
It's so different, and the culture of the country is also obviously threaded into that. But I could compare it to, I was quite fortunate to be able to attend the 2022 World Cup semi-final and final as well. So it was quite comparable in terms of going to a World Cup versus going to club football, Champions League final. And I think that they were both so special, but so in such a different way. So those were definitely two of the highlights for me.
So what is the day-to-day job for you at the moment? And you say you organized a group that went over for the UEFA Champions League final. I mean, that's quite cool. These are obviously people who you're fulfilling their bucket list experience for them by planning and putting this stuff together.
Exactly. So it's such a there's such a high expectation as well. Obviously, a lot of companies, corporate companies, use these trips as performance drivers. And so the weight heavily sits on your shoulders to make sure that, as you said in the intro, that there's precision and that there is opulence when you are planning this trip,
because a small glitch can really taint the experience. So a lot of it is actually kind of sitting back and making sure that you really dot all the I's and cross all the T's so that the experience is elevated from the time that they arrive, building up to the main event, and that they leave there feeling like, wow, that was incredible. I've got to see what's happening for next year and hit the targets so that I can join the trip for next year. So yeah, a lot of it is really just so much planning, and in the blink of an eye, the trip goes by so quickly after planning it for almost more than a year. Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you this, because you put these things together anyway, and you're probably the most qualified person in the world to answer it. If money was no object, what would be the ultimate travel experience that you could plan for you, not for anyone else? I mean, just think about that. And anybody who's listening to us or watching us this morning, if money wasn't an object and you had an entire month to do something, you could leave on the first and you could be back at the end of that month, and whatever you wanted to do, you could do. Where would you go?
So I've got two bucket list destinations that I really want to visit, and it's more of, one is a continent, so it's South America. Mm. But higher on my list, because they're going extinct quite soon, I'd love to visit China, go to see the pandas, Great Wall of China, the Shaolin monks, and then hop over to Japan. And literally, I'm quite a huge foodie, so I really want to hit every single Michelin restaurant in Japan and have a crazy dining experience for like 2 weeks on end.
I heard Japan is amazing, but it's quite expensive.
It is. It's up there with the US. When you're thinking about planning a Japan trip, you've got to make sure that the budget is 100% there and people know what they're in for, because it is quite expensive.
Okay. You're going soon, aren't you, Ben? You want to go?
I really want to go to Japan within the next 3 years. I want to do it while I'm still like young and energetic. Yeah. It just feels like it's a different sort of society, like a different sort of experience, different sort of world. They just see things differently. Things operate differently. Because that's another thing you want to do. You want to have a unique experience away from home.
Yeah.
And I don't think it gets more different than that, because contrast is another beautiful thing about travel.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think Japan would be fascinating. So, all right, in your experience then, Stacey, because I mean, for a lot of us, we'll never have the breadth of experience that you are having and that you will have and that you have already had. But what destinations surprised you the most? Because, and that could be good or bad, right? For many of us who haven't been to the 36 countries that you have, it's kind of a bit of a gamble. You don't know. You book things, and people often worry about, and this is why you should go to travel.co.za, by the way, because they have people who know what the hell they're doing. But people take a chance, and then they end up in this country, and they have the most absolutely horrible time, or it surprises them, and it's better than they expected.
I think that country would have to be Sri Lanka.
Oh, yeah?
I was not expecting Sri Lanka to be as cool as it was entirely. I actually think when we planned the trip, it was a personal trip, and when we planned it, we kind of also had mixed thoughts in our mind of what the expectation should be for the destination. But when we arrived there, so I'm originally from Cape Town, I literally felt like we went down to the south of Sri Lanka, Bintota, and I was like, wow, this literally feels like home. Everybody's surfing, having a smoke on the one side. It's super chilled, but they're just Indian. That's it. It's like Cape Town, more of an Indian culture.
It was pretty cool. And while we're talking about Sri Lanka, because we've actually had someone on just not so long ago telling us about Sri Lanka, it's not as expensive as Japan or the US that we were talking about just now.
It's not at all. It's very affordable. I think for South Africans, if you are considering traveling there, the only thing that might be a deterrent is the time to get to the destination. Mm. But once you're in the destination, I mean, it's incredible. You can literally still ride the trains, go through all of these jungles, go to the highest mountain where they've got tea factories. It's really, really incredible. And the people are also just so relaxed, very welcoming. So they've got that Indian hospitality with that cool Cape Town vibe, I'd say, like that surfer vibe going on. So it's a pretty cool destination and very beautiful at that as well.
Okay, so I can't let you go with all your travel experience without you giving us a couple of hacks for actual travel, because I love the destination. There's very little usually that puts me off there. Once you're in the place that you've always wanted to be in or that you've had a kind of curiosity about, it's delightful. But actually traveling can be a real pain. So what are your hacks for airports, for planes, for buses, for prep, for packing, for all of those things?
Packing, roll your clothes. When you roll your clothes versus roll them, literally roll them up. When you roll them versus packing them, you get so much more space. And make sure that you also pack a bag that's an expandable bag inside your suitcase. In case you are like me and you like to do lots of shopping, I always pack a little extra bag inside so that I can always pull it out and fill it up if needed. And then also when you're in the airport, I mean, a lot of airports have now converted to being silent airports. If you're not on our travel app, get logged on first of all with your companies. We can send you push notifications to make sure you get your notifications at the palm of your hands so that you don't miss any important information. And the important thing a lot of people don't actually realize is get to the airport a bit earlier. Sometimes, you know, you get different type of travelers that are a bit more nervous, some that are a bit more chilled and will get to the airport literally 1 hour before that international flight takes off. But you never know what happens along the way. You don't want to spoil your experience from the beginning. And then one of the really cool hacks that I found out via Qatar Airways kind of gave me the in on this. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for an emergency exit row seat and you've got a little bit of longer legs and you're not happy with your current seat, go up to the counter after you've passed through immigration, you're about to board the flight at least 1 hour before. 1 hour before, all seats cannot be sold anymore. So whatever seats are available is anyone's game. So you can grab a seat that you like, even if it's an emergency exit row seat, they'll give that to you 1 hour before the flight actually departs.
Wow, okay. That's handy to know.
It's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, that really makes a difference, because that little bit of space on a long flight is a massive thing. It's amazing how that little bit of space, you feel like a millionaire on a plane, right?
Absolutely.
But if you have that space just in the office, you don't think about it at all. You have more space at your office desk than you do in economy class, but you don't think about it. It's phenomenal. All right, well, exactly. Stacey, it's a great pleasure to have you on. And thank you very much for sharing your stories with us. I know that you've probably got lots more, and I hope we'll see you again on the window seat. And keep us updated with your travels.
Thanks, Amol. Gareth, I'm looking forward to leaving next week. I'm off on a plane to Bali for my annual vacation. So hope to chat to you guys again soon, and have an awesome day. Thank you.
Thank you so much. There's Stacey Lee Roberts, who's a business development executive, and she's just sharing her bucket list stuff with us and telling us about her journeys that mattered most.
36 countries, huh?
Yeah.
I'm up to 27 now, and I'm very proud of that.
Damn right. You hadn't been to Spain before this trip?
No.
Okay.
First time. Good time. Yeah, 27. It's
that's quite good, Ben.
Because all of them are unique. They've all got something.
Yeah.
They've all given you something, shown you something. And the memories are forever. It really is so great.
Yeah, I mean, who will ever forget our trip to Bulgaria?
No one.
Where we learned that this means no, and that means yes.
Bulgaria will never forget the people, all the friends we made. Paco, the bus driver.
Who?
Paco, the bus driver.
Yeah, the bus driver. That's right. I'd forgotten him, but thank you for the reminder.
Oh, how did you forget it?
And a Petpo beer. Very good. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Ben's here. It's Wednesday. I hope you're having an awesome start to your day. Don't go anywhere.